folks, this is Scotty Roberts from Intrepid Radio, and I'm sitting here with Dr. John Ward.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
And it is about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Egyptian time, and we have just left the Giza Plateau. We are riding our bus from the Giza Plateau where
to the Cairo Museum.
The Cairo Museum. And what we saw at the Giza... John, what did we see at the Giza Plateau? People might not know what's at the Giza Plateau.
What isn't at the Giza Plateau apart from the sales touts, Lucky Charms,
yes,
sand?
We just barely made it to do this broadcast from the clutches, I would say.
The clutches of the salesmen that were coming through the
local
door.
Local street vendors. You buy.
You buy 5 pounds? Why do you not buy from me?
You
don't like me.
I have a family. I have breastfeeding babies.
Tell everybody in America to come to Egypt. It's a nice place. Okay.
And we buy you buy my Egyptian pens. I asked him if it had Egyptian ink, and
so
I
we've
think
had
he didn't
a,
know what I meant.
We have had a fantastic time so far this morning. We started off at 8 o'clock this morning, and we did the Giza Plateau. We did the three pyramids. We walked down across the plateau, and we visited all three pyramids and the Sphinx. And we even managed to, all of us, bar Brenda, actually climb within the King's Chamber itself, which was an amazing feat. And hats off to some of our more elderly participants of our wonderful group. Also, we were able to have Chris Carter.
I thought we were getting Chris Carter to come on this tour. You know, the producer, director, originator.
Well, that's why I keep on asking
the X Files.
I keep on asking what the X Files is like, but he keeps on looking at me about, and he keeps on saying "most haunted" for some reason. I don't know why, but there we go.
I don't know either. But I think it was a typo in his name.
Yes. I think so.
And I didn't realize I was coming to Egypt. I thought I was going on a game show.
But Chris, all seriousness,
I'll take Giza pyramids for $500.
Yes.
All seriousness, I saw you earlier today when we were by the. We're actually live recording this while we're actually on the bus, and the roads are not exactly the best in Egypt.
No.
But while we were there at the, I think it was the Pyramid of Khafre, I saw you with doing a kind of hands-on experience. Can you explain to our audience what it was you were doing?
Yeah, it was psychometry, which is basically reading the energy of objects or buildings or anything around by the energy that's in them.
Mm-hmm.
All the rocks and looked very, very similar, but there was one that looked like the bottom of a pillar, and I think there's about two or three or four of them, but there was one in particular which, to someone like myself, it was like a battery. It was just vibrating and pulsing, it reminded me, the only thing I could sort of bring it closest to is Stonehenge.
Okay.
With that sort of energy force coming from it.
Uh-huh.
So got a few people to come round it and see what they could feel, including good Scotty Roberts.
I did. And
Scotty actually felt it as well. And then...
What, the stone?
Oh, we're still talking the stone.
Scotty came nowhere near the stone.
Well, and let me say this too. There is always the power of suggestion when it comes to these things, where somebody might feel something and they might ask in the room, does everybody smell tobacco smoke? And everybody will start saying, oh, I smell that too. Do you feel this vibration? And people join in. So what I tried to do as I was doing that was to clear my mind of anything and see if I actually did feel something.
And did you feel anything?
I did. But what I noticed was it was going to take an awful lot of what I don't have is what Chris has, and that is that ability to feel something and to quickly be able to clear your mind of something.
Yes.
And to be able to, I guess it's almost like a meditation. It's to be able to...
Basically, that's what it is. It's being able to take yourself to the state that meditation will take you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's most mediums have the ability to go there. It's almost like the cusp between being awake and falling asleep. And a medium can go to that cusp, and that's where you're at your most psychic, which is why a lot of time when you're falling asleep, you feel as if maybe somebody's walked in the room or something happens, which a lot of people put down to the fact that they'd fell asleep, and it's because you're at your most psychic at that point.
So what, for the benefit of the audience, because they weren't there to see you actually do it, can you kind of describe in basic terms,
yes,
what it was you felt through your fingers. Did you have images? Was it just, was it a kind of tingling feeling? I don't want to be suggestive here.
No. That particular rock, it was, the only way I could describe it is like a pulse, a vibration. You can feel the energy coming from this, the way you would feel from, for example, a battery or something. You've got that sort of energy coming.
So it was like a tingling feeling?
Yes, from that particular one. But image, etc., came from when we went to another tomb, which was nearby, which I assumed, because beside the pyramids, it would be some sort of noble or something like that. But the particular energy that came through, he was showing me images of stonemasonry, and so that the gentleman was basically, he was a master craftsman, a stone cutter. Yes.
Right. Now, for the benefit of the people back home, I mean, I can now tell you what it was you were looking at. The stone that you were looking at was a piece of red granite, which was quarried from Aswan.
Yeah.
The particular part that you were looking at had come away from the casing of the main pyramid itself, from the pyramid of Khafre.
Uh-huh.
The cut marks that you could see that were running around its perimeter, around the central perimeter, they are from the Islamic period, where they were actually removing the granite casing from the pyramid to use for the building materials of Cairo itself, for the mosques and so forth. The particular stone, again, going back to it, on the surface, around the edging, there were what we call, refer to as wedge marks. So where they were actually splitting the stone in two, basically.
Yeah.
They'd actually chiseled a hole and placed inside it a wooden or even a metal wedge that had been struck then by another a mallet or a hammer, which would then have fractured the stone and then allowed it to be split.
Okay.
Now, I remember you saying to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, but you made reference to religion.
Yes, there was a that was the first thing that came through. It was the fact that it was almost as if the people, not so much worshipping it, but they've been putting a lot of religious intent into this particular piece of stoneware.
And did you get a date on that kind of religion?
No.
On that religion?
It was just the religious feeling, the ceremonial
practice, maybe. As you said, the word intent is very strong.
Yeah.
But you weren't able to hone in on any particular religion.
No.
So you didn't have anything else that went with that. It was just for you.
It was just a religious
intent,
yes,
that was placed upon the stone.
Yes.
Now, we discussed this on the plateau, by the side of this particular stone, Chris, that one has to take in consideration that the stone itself had first been quarried during the old kingdom, during the dynastic period, from Aswan. Mm-hmm. So that was actually hand quarried from Aswan. It was then transported by barge.
Okay.
Up the Nile to the Giza Plateau.
Mm-hmm.
It was then removed from the barge to its placement and then dressed and cut in situ to allow it to be placed as a casing stone, as part of one piece of the greater jigsaw, so to speak. And that was the dynastic. Then it was removed by another religion, Islam, to build the mosques. So there you have two religions straight away working quite intently, one would say, on the stone. Now, do you think any one of those two were the ones that you were picking up, or both, or
a mixture of both? I couldn't tell you exactly what religion. It's more the, because when it comes to energy, all religion
at its core, it's
the same sort of feeling that comes through. So,
what did you think, Scotty? What did you get any feeling of religion? Or?
You know, I did not, because it was enough for me to just try to focus enough energy to clear my mind a bit and to just see if I felt anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And what I felt was what Chris was suggesting. He did ask if I felt any kind of vibration. And mind you, the noises you're hearing in the background, we are in very heavy traffic in Cairo.
It's actually a couple of camels, actually.
And there are two camels in the way.
Yep, two camels have just been over the bridge there.
They've just been over the bridge.
And now there's a man who's buying a pack of cigarettes who's decided to park his car in the
middle of the
street.
He stopped his car right in the middle of very heavy traffic where there are no real lanes to walk outside and get a pack of cigarettes from the street.
Oh, here we go.
We're moving again.
So
what I felt when I put my hand on the stone, it took me a few minutes but I could definitely feel a pull there. It was mild for me. I've experienced some of this before in different ways, and so training my mind to do something like
yes.
that
yeah.
Would take an awful lot of time for me to really get back into a mode of being able to do anything like that in, with any kind of,
the museum, so
I suppose, speed, you could say.
Yes.
So, I did feel some things, and but it didn't go beyond just simple vibration.
Yeah.
And we almost had a head-to-head here, collision on the street. But that's,
that's
you know what you do
Egypt,
when you drive
it's
in
all
Egypt?
Part of the excitement?
Yes.
You just tune out and you let the driver go. There's no accidents
now,
here. They just drive.
When I put my hands on there, I must admit, I said to you, Chris, I could feel a sensation. I can't, hand on heart, I can't be honest what that sensation was. And again, I said to you at the time, I said, suggestively, I already know the history behind this particular stone. So for me, it would be psychosomatic. I automatically see a man cutting the stone. But that's an image I know is historically correct and associated with that particular stone. So,
and I think even a medium is in danger of falling into that trap, which is why when you and Scotty were doing the sort of historical part, I was always away from it, because of the fact, I think when you start to get energy or images, etc., if you know even part of the history, it's your logical brain will take over.
Now, I wondered about that, because while we were walking through everything, and you were standing afar off.
Yes.
And just your arms crossed, and you were just kind of contemplating, kind of quiet. And folks, you in there, we just had a donkey cart filled with propane tanks drawn by donkey, just cut us off.
Yeah.
That's actually where you can buy very good European dog breeds, actually, just there.
Oh, you can.
Yeah. Oh, look at the lovely canal.
That's very good to know. We just crossed the canal.
Yeah, which is actually a stream.
Now we're going to take our life into our own hands by entering the ring road around Cairo.
Ah, yes. But I did want to say this, too, to give a little bit more of a visual picture in your mind. When you approach these three pyramids that are traditionally seen in postcards and on the internet and documentaries, we see them as if they're floating out there in the middle of the flat desert.
Yes.
Yeah. What you fail to be able to see most of the time is that the city of Giza, which is really a far suburb of Cairo, busy Cairo, runs right up to just about right up onto the Giza Plateau. As a matter of fact, our hotel is a stone's throw away. You can get up on the roof and look at the pyramids.
Yeah.
And so it's like going to Wrigley Field in Chicago and watching it from the top of an apartment building.
Yeah.
So so what you don't see when you see most of these pictures of the pyramids is the fact that these pyramids are surrounded by unexcavated ruins all through the dunes, surrounded by partially excavated temples, tomb sites. Right around the Sphinx, the cemetery where they found some of the common workers' village corpses left over from the buildings of the pyramids. And you see all these little temple structures and the causeways that run between them, the causeways that run processional ways from the back of the Queen's Pyramid all the way down to the city of Cairo, miles away. You can see it on the desert sand. And so when you approach the Great Pyramid of Khufu, which is where we were talking with Chris about this particular stone, once you pass the flats, you find yourself in an open quarry around the base of the Great Pyramid. And I would say it's roughly 75 to 100 feet wide, this canal, and maybe 20 to 30 feet deep. That goes all the way around, well, at least around two sides of this pyramid. And this is where they quarried some of the stone. These are where some of the tombs are that are built in there. And when Chris mentioned the tomb of what he felt was not necessarily a nobleman, but an artisan of some kind, somebody who was a stone worker or stone mason, it's very probable that one of these tombs belonged to one of those men who was in charge of clearing those quarries out right at the base of the pyramid. And the pyramid itself, The first, what is it, about seven courses of what looked like stonework are really carved out bedrock.
Yes.
And so this is an existing monument that was there by nature, and they carved it out of stone and erected the pyramid up and around it. So this is where we are when this is taking place.
Yes.
And what you're seeing is the the caps, not capstones, the covering stones that fit over the rough pyramid which you see today, which gave it its smooth surface. And these have all been pulled away over the centuries and millennia. And so some of these stones have been brought down and recarved, and this is where Chris was pulling his energy from this stone. And I remember John suggesting there on the site that maybe what Chris is feeling is what happened, not at origination point of carving it as a covering stone, but perhaps something that happened with that stone after it was pulled off of the pyramid itself.
That for me would make more sense. But I also, because you mentioned a few other experiences that you had on the plateau.
Yes. Well, I think I need to explain as well, for MD, it's not that that isn't sensitive or mediumistic, that's never been there before. The very, very difficult thing that I found for probably the first 30, 40, 50 minutes we were there was to get anything at all, because there was so much. When I go to a location where anywhere in the UK or America or anywhere, there tends to be two, three, maybe at most maybe four spirits in this particular area, so stripping it back is a lot easier. And what I found was there was so much coming at me that it wasn't making sense. It was like 100 people running at you at once trying to talk, now, and that was the difficulty at
Mike,
first.
Might you be drawing energy, if you will, off of the people that are there? Because not only were there tourists there, and I would say 90% of what were the tourists there were locals, they were Egyptians, and probably the tourists today were outnumbered at least 5-1 by vendors. Camel jockeys, horse vendors, carton trying to sell you postcards, headdresses, jewelry, Egyptian pens, whatever you might have. Yeah. So how much energy do you think when you're walking into a place like that is going to bombard you when you're trying to feel for older energy? How do you distinguish them?
Between the two of them, it's a different form of energy. The energy of people that are round about, the energy coming off of them is a lot more vibrant. It's, if you like, still alive. It's like a live electricity source, whereas the energy of spirit gone by is more residual. It's there in layers. Some of it, energy, the spirit energy is trying to communicate with you. Others, what you're tapping into is the energy of events, of the men that would be there working, building the pyramids. All of that energy still remains. So it's cutting through that before you can even start to differentiate between what's what. And it's, I always explain it as it's like being a foggy day and not knowing exactly what to pull out of it, and the trick is it's not making any assumptions. Never assume that you know what you're getting. It's trying to make it as basic as possible, and then hopefully once it starts to come through, it either makes sense to myself or to John or Scotty.
Now, one of the main things for me today, and it was, and this was actually quite nice, Chris, to have you on board, especially now, because it's an opportunity that I haven't had before. And I don't know if I can't really speak for yourself, Scotty, on this, but for years that I've visited Giza, and I've been inside the King's Chamber now more times than I can actually remember, and when people have asked me, "Oh, you've been inside the King's Chamber? Wow, the energy!" We've spoken to various people, even at Paradigm Symposium, where they mention the toning and so forth, and they talk about playing with the energies and feeling the energies and working with the energies and so forth. And I've always been very honest about it. I've never, ever felt anything inside the King's Chamber other than acoustics.
Yes,
I will tell you, when I was there with you last year, a year ago, we had it, the King's Chamber, pretty much to ourselves for a few minutes.
We did, yes.
And so we weren't trying any kind of spiritual toning, if you will.
No.
But we just did a little harmonizing.
Yes.
We sang a few chords and harmonized together, and the acoustics in there were
amazing.
Phenomenal. They would not just bounce off the walls like a long marble hallway. These harmonies would come back on you and almost vibrate with you, which was, I saw nothing overtly spiritual about that. I just saw that as a natural, almost an echo chamber that bounced back wonderful harmonies. But I will also tell you this, I didn't feel anything overtly spiritually spiritual in there.
It's always been what I call a dead zone.
A black
excuse
room.
The pun, you know, being a burial burial chamber. It doesn't actually have this kind of residual energy that people rant and rave on about. I just don't feel it, but maybe I'm wrong.
No. Well, the first thing I says to you, because obviously you'd said you've got thoughts about the King's Chamber, because I'm not going to say, because I don't want to put any sort of preconceptions in your own head. And the first thing I says to you when I went in there was, there's never been a body in here.
Yeah.
Even when there's a body of a loved one who's passed away and who's been lying
in state
ready to go and be buried, there's that residual energy.
Yeah.
But in there, it's as flat as a pancake. And I'm not poo-pooing anybody else that's felt anything in there, but for me personally, on that particular occasion, I didn't feel anything. I must admit, I felt the vibration, which was not spiritual. I felt the acoustics were amazing, but I don't know what that room was for, but I didn't feel.
Yeah,
there's a sarcophagus in there. But
yes,
I don't
it is.
Well, is it a sarcophagus? That's the question.
Well, there's the big
it's
question.
A big question. At the moment, it is an oblong box.
Yeah.
It does not resemble a sarcophagus.
It doesn't have any of the hieroglyphs.
It has
would suggest it's a
no. It is what it is. A box.
It's a box
without a lid.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Set off center from the room. And but I was interested to hear your take on that. That you agreed with me that
yes.
You felt nothing in there.
Not a thing.
So I find it difficult when these people say, "Oh yes, I feel so much in there." So I don't see it myself.
No.
I just don't see it. But that was. But what did you think overall of this morning, guys? What did
loved
you think?
It. Loved
Giza.
It.
Oh, loved it.
Fantastic place. Fantastic experience. Fantastic energy. Just everything was. A great group of people. Just at the full day was just. Was
and do you think the rest of the gang enjoyed themselves?
Loved it.
I loved it.
Did you get any feedback?
What the people that have spoke to, everybody took something at different levels from today. There was some people even just getting up to the Kingship, they were delighted before that, and they felt that the journey there was well worth it. And I think everybody's learned something today. Whether it's spiritual, whether it's historical from you guys, I think everybody's taken a really good thing from today, which they can then take away for the rest of their lives.
And did you see anybody gimping around, anybody limping at all?
There was one gentleman who, I don't think he was with our group, but as I was looking at the name Scotty Roberts
was coming through. You were channeling it.
I was channeling it, and I kept getting the name Scotty and then Roberts.
And was that when he fell over?
It was just before he fell over.
Ungracefully, one might add.
But I have to say,
backwards.
And what I was very disappointed in his lack of professionalism was I got the camcorder out.
And he didn't give me the prompt.
I asked him to do it again, and he refused.
Yes.
Which I thought was a bit unprofessional.
Again, as like last year, when he tripped on a pebble.
On a pebble last year.
Chipper as a spring chicken today.
To be fair, I think it was more than a pebble today. I would say it was maybe a curbstone.
A misplaced curbstone.
All I did was trip backwards. Walking backwards, telling a street vendor to shove off.
No. You weren't actually. You were being very polite.
She was very nice.
She was a lovely little girl with the most beautiful eyes.
Yeah.
And you were talking to her about how she would go to university.
She looked like she had to be about all of 7 years old.
And she followed
me for a good 15 minutes.
I think, to be fair, and Scotty Roberts, I think what happened was he seen that they were not having a good day. There wasn't many tourists, and he thought,
a bit of slapstick.
Yes, I'll fall over. And I thought it was very, very, very...
Very professional.
Very professional of him.
I thought I handled it very professionally.
In the words of the great Chris Carter... Did you feel the energy there? It was great energy.
I felt the energy.
Great
That's
energy.
It's pure energy.
Now, you sound like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes.
You got that twang to it.
No, that'd be pure energy, darling.
Oh, pure energy.
Doll, you. Oh,
so,
oh, I'll send you to bed without your super if you keep that open.
So we've got 6 minutes left here, guys.
Yes, yes,
we do. Where are we off to now? We've just had a fantastic lunch at Falafel.
Yes, beautiful. Yes,
we did. And
absolutely
we
beautiful.
Had a beautiful, amazing birthday cake.
Yes, yes.
We did.
For one of our lovely ladies.
Yes,
whose
yes
birthday.
Indeed.
And how old is Susan? I think she's,
I would
what,
say
27.
About
39?
I would say about 21, personally. Yeah, but 21.
Yeah, yeah. 21.
I would say 21.
21 again. There yeah you go, Susan.
I wouldn't even say again. I would say definitely 21.
No, no, no. Shh.
Well, and while these two are rambling on about that, we are headed now to the Cairo Museum.
We are indeed.
Which
are
is on
yes
the opposite end of Cairo, and we're taking the Ring Road.
Hence the name Cairo Museum.
In Cairo.
Yeah,
Museum.
In Cairo. Yeah.
In Cairo.
Yeah,
that's in Cairo.
Yes.
In Cairo.
Yes, filled with artifacts
from
Cairo
and
the surrounding
yes
areas.
Yes.
So it's
and
the Egyptian Museum in Cairo.
It is. Now, this
and
Egyptian
it's called the Cairo Museum.
Yes.
This Cairo Museum.
Which I thought was rather clever of them. It's a play on words, isn't it? Cairo
Museum.
Did
you channel that?
I channeled it, yes.
Okay.
Just before Scotty
the
fell.
Psychic energy
yeah
in
yeah
this
yeah
room is making me reverberate. So, one thing about the Cairo Museum is that this was the museum that was actually there when Carter himself.
It was
excavated.
Yes.
Chris Carter?
Chris Carter.
Chris
me?
Carter. Different Carter.
Different,
oh, different
Carter.
Howard Carter.
Howard Carter.
The
who
man who discovered King Tut's tomb.
Who is
but
very interesting. Our birthday girl.
Also, our birthday girl is also related
to
Howard Carter.
I think it was her
Susan,
grandfather's...
Susan, please, tell, you don't need to be on... Don't worry about it. Just answer this question normally okay for us. What was the relationship between yourself and the original Howard Carter, the great Egyptologist?
Well, my father and Howard were first cousins.
First cousins?
Yes, and they lived in Swaffham in Norfolk and grew up together.
So, for you, what's the feeling about travelling on this adventure, being here?
Oh, it's very exciting.
Yeah?
Just
and
amazing.
Do you have visions? Do you think about Howard? And
oh, all the time. I'm just really sad that I didn't know him. You know, I should have known him.
And the important question, did you see Scotty Roberts fall?
No. I saw the damage, but I didn't
did
see him fall.
And did you laugh?
I laugh when I saw.
That's the main thing.
Well, it was hilarious. You know, John does like to make an awful lot of sport of my falling, but I will tell you this.
As a whole year's worth
I was
of
material. Spry, sprite, sprightly, chipper today, and all I did was stumble over a curb backwards.
Pin,
and I will,
and
this
fell
will be,
like a bag
and there will be
yes
pure
yes
energy
yes
attached to this fall for the next year. This is what he is going to have to work with. This is his material.
It's wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful material.
Yes.
Yes.
But
all I achieved was a bit of road rash.
There is one more thing, because we've got 2.5 minutes left, and I just want to wrap this up. I would like to speak to... We're not going to be able to speak about it, of course.
Yeah.
But what's the one thing that both you, Chris, and me, and I hope Scotty as well is going to be involved. We're involving him in this.
Oh, thank
yes
you.
But what's the one thing that we're both excited about going to the Cairo Museum to look for?
I would say some artifacts
and
stumbled across by Mr. Alistair Crowley.
And would that be the Stelae of Revealing?
I think so.
And what was the number of the Stelae of Revealing?
666.
That was the old number
yeah
given to it when
and
when
so,
Cairo Museum was the Bula.
Yes.
Just a hint, this afternoon yet, we will be chasing Crowley.
Yes.
Chasing Crowley.
Chasing Crowley.
Excellent.
Can't all right, wait folks, we want to thank you for listening to today's update to the Exodus Reality Adventure. And it is, of course, me, Scotty Roberts, and Dr. John Ward here on the Intrepid Radio program on KGRA Radio. John?
Yes, sir.
Say goodnight to the folks.
Good night, folks.
Chris, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Chris.
You're
everyone
welcome.
Did you have a fun day today?
Yay!
Everyone, did you like Scotty Roberts falling?
Yay!
There you go. See, at least I do things with panache. Signing off until tomorrow. See you later.
Take care.
Bye, guys.